Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 23rd on the West Coast, and now February the 24th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. We'd like to also welcome those listening to tonight's broadcast on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, as well as on blogtalkradio.com. Lots going on. Of course, the Olympics are going on, and everyone's attention is basically drawn to the garnering of medals, be it gold, silver, or bronze. And in the meantime, there are those who are quite disinterested because they're dealing daily with life and death issues regarding the health of their loved ones, especially their children, all the members of their family, even into senior citizens' age. And we are going to be talking tonight about a topic that we discussed last week with our guest, who we've invited back for the purpose of going deeper into the issue of vaccinations and what actually occurs when you get a vaccination. I have to tell you that last week's show was very interesting for a lot of people. I got a lot of response from the listeners. And on that basis, I know that we'll be inviting our guest tonight back many more times to discuss this issue. She has spent at least 25 years researching the issue of vaccinations and the impact upon the health of the vaccine recipient. And I have to tell you, looking at her most recent publication, at least that I'm aware of, Tracking Vaccinations, The Autism Trail, she really knows her stuff. We found that out last week. She is just a fountain of information, and this isn't to take anything away from any doctors out there who also know their stuff, but she is one of us. And what I mean to say is her interest is bringing you the truth, bringing us all the truth, so that we can make intelligent and informed decisions. I urge you, we'll be talking about this booklet that she published, Tracking Vaccinations. I urge you to get your own copy of this and do some reading, and we'll be talking about that. So I'd like to welcome back tonight to Evident Footprints, someone who's becoming a very good friend and respected for the work that she does, Allison Jones. Allison, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Don. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure. You blew my socks off with this booklet, I'm telling you. It's just chock full of information, and I had promised you I'm going to do a review on my books page and post it there so that people have a secondary way of finding it when they're perusing the books that I have and the book reviews that I have on my website. I haven't done that yet because I just got this today and sort of speed read my way through it, but it's fascinating information.
Yes, and it's quite different than everything else because I don't just banter statistics back and forth. Everything I say can be cross-referenced in any medical textbook, basically. I just pieced it all together in one spot.
Mm-hmm. For the new listeners that we have, if you would, if I could impose upon you to describe how you got into this research so that people can sort of feel grounded.
I'd love to sum it up in a nutshell. Yeah, basically it started back in 1984 when I brought my first two children in for their first shot. I had waited till they were 4 and 5 years old, so they had not received any injections up till that point. And my four-year-old became paralyzed for 3 days. He was stiff as a board, and he could only breathe and swallow. And I wanted to know exactly what happened. They knew it was the shot and said he shouldn't have that particular one anymore, which was the one for whooping cough. back then called the DPT, and I know exactly what caused it now. And it's because when they put tetanus or diphtheria into shots, they're the toxins that they're putting in, and they're bacteria that grow toxins, and they have to add the antitoxin. They must add the antidote. It's much like getting a snake bite and having to receive the antivenom at the same time. Unfortunately, while they're manufacturing it, they do not bother to measure how much toxin is present, so they don't know how much antitoxin to add, and they only put an average amount in, and the batch my son got was a batch that did not have enough of the antitoxin added. Because if they just put an average amount, that means some batches will have more than they need and some won't have enough. He got a batch that didn't have enough. And that's just one kind of vaccine, though. That's the bacterial vaccines, which are dead. They have to be all served up dead. And because they're dead, the immune system doesn't respond. So they put poison in it, i.e. the diphtheria toxin, and they put that in it especially, and a little tetanus too, but usually, but the diphtheria is used in all the bacterial vaccines to force an immune response. And they put in more for the ones, the shots that are for the babies, because their immune systems are immature. So ironically, though the babies are the most vulnerable, their immune systems are so immature, they have to make the vaccines more toxic to make them work, to force that immune response out of this immature system. So ironically, yes, their vaccines are 10 times more toxic than the ones they've recently made for adults. For a long time, they were banned for adults, because adults don't like, you know, occasionally they get the batch without enough antitoxin and they'll feel burning sensation in their brain. Unfortunately, in babies, that burning sensation translates into destroyed brain cells, which I read researchers' notes on it. They'll show that they can look at the slides of a baby's brain and know exactly what month they had an onslaught or, you know, that had destroyed a lot of brain cells, exactly when that can happen. And they can see the tips of their dendrites are seared shut and destroyed by these poisons. Poisons are not a good thing.
And I suppose, too, that depending on the particular batch of shots that vaccine came out of, or, you know, the supply, in other words, on the basis of what you're describing, that that these anti-toxins or anti-venom, or depending on the shot, are not measured. So everyone's going to react differently. Some people are going to be more sensitive to it, or it could be a lethal dose.
Well, that's why, I tell people to look up words like when you read Ehrlich's phenomenon, which describes them trying. Ehrlich's phenomenon is the kind of like their formula for figuring out how much antitoxin to add. And in it, they talk about the minimal lethal dosage level that they have to begin with. And it's quite shocking because the minimal lethal dosage level is different for all the lab animals, which they go into discussing in it also. And obviously it would be different for human beings too. And also too, a tolerance is created towards these poisons over time, which is kind of an interesting phenomenon too. But there is no tolerance level once you receive a dose that, say, has too much tetanus, like my son did. And if he had not been a strong, big four-year-old and had been only a six-week-old baby, that baby would have gotten a dose as strong as the one as my son had received. And that would have stopped his breathing and his heart also if he had been 6 weeks old. So it's evident that when you look at how, you know, the effects of tetanus toxoid and diphtheria toxin, that both of these can kill babies in the first few months of life. And that's what's going on. When parents are waiting, standing over a crib, trying to keep their child breathing, they're actually waiting for the poisons to wear off, which takes about 2 months. And once they've worn out, they actually give them another booster. And they're keeping these toxins circulating in their bloodstream on purpose, because that is the vaccine. And people don't really realize that we're trying to manipulate a disease here, manipulate an immune response. These aren't vitamins. These aren't good things. We're playing with science here, and a lot of it really borders on science fiction, you know, very Frankensteinish kind of work here on, you know, we're talking about living viruses too and dead viruses, and these are not all these things could be manipulated into safe vaccines. There's no way. The only ones that really work are the living viral ones, and only if they're not injected, like the polio. The oral polio is the only really good one. You know, all the other ones have various degrees of dangers to them. And I mean mostly to babies, too, to the developing brains of children. That's when it's obvious that we're playing with fire here.
Now, when I use my, whether it's intuition or maybe just plain old common sense, I think to myself, well, okay, the vaccine, any vaccine is supposed to be a preventative against the disease. And then you go through the logic, just the mental process of, well, if you're not exposed to the disease now, and you may never become exposed to the disease, certainly by getting the vaccine, to some extent, you're being exposed to the disease.
Ah.
What happens to the remnants of the vaccine that, you described this reaction over a couple of months? It sort of tones down, the fever goes away, all the idiosyncrasies that the child or the person that got the vaccine has sort of calmed down, died down, if that's the proper term. Yet, is it really gone? Is it really out of the system? And I get the impression from what I read that that's not the case, that it stays in.
Well, yes, this is an interesting point. See, the only vaccine that lasts for life are the ones that are alive, the living viral ones. The other two are dead. The virus that's dead and the bacteria that's dead, they only last a few years in a mature immune system, in an adult, or someone over the age of two. Actually, below the age of 18 months at least, if not 2 years old, the immune system's so immature it doesn't remember anything, not even the living viral ones. That's why they wait over a year to give them. All the other ones they give early. So
okay.
The ones that are dead, our body actually, other than the tetanus and the toxoids, which last 10 years, they all fade away. And no adults are vaccinated, basically. I mean, I don't know anybody who's gotten a vaccine as an adult.
Well,
and so we're
pushing,
walking around and we're not getting diseases.
They're certainly pushing flu vaccines, bird flu, SARS, swine flu.
Well, yeah, that's a whole nother episode talking about that debacle. Actually the swine flu was already in the flu shot that they've been giving the old people for years. They already had the vaccine in that. So, that was a strange thing. But it will fade away. It's true. You have the poison circulating. The immune system reacts differently to the dead viruses than they do to the dead bacteria. The immune system is much more frightened of the dead viruses. So they have a greater success story with those, but they all fade within about 3 years. Other than the toxoids. So they really are just temporarily covering the children. I mean, if they're really afraid of whooping cough, they should be vaccinating the adults. The adults are the carriers, not the kids. The kids get them from the adults, obviously, because they're the new ones in the world. But adults don't want to get vaccinated because our intuition tells us that there's something wrong with them. They're dangerous. We don't know what's in the vial. We're squeamish. But we have no problem giving them to the kids. So I really think that if a parent is that gung-ho to vaccinate their child, they should test the vaccine on themselves first. But oddly enough, some of the vaccines are banned for adults because, guess what, they're too dangerous for adults, like the one for whooping cough. For 60 years, it's the first one that came out in the 1940s. It's the most toxic one. It's the one that really first started giving us autistic kids. And then we started piling on things like you got the mercury in the dead viral ones that kills brain cells, and they give that out in the Hep B the minute they're born. And then they have the living viral ones, which they give too soon. They used to wait 18 months. They've dropped it down to 12 months, which is why part of the reason we have such an escalation in autism in the 1990s. That's when they did that. And they're just not paying attention to what they're doing. They're being very sloppy about this whole science here, and they have to be very specific and perfectionist dealing with these things.
Now it seems, Allison, that pretty much anyone who has studied this phenomenon of autism and can attribute it to vaccines, I know the answer to this question, but in your mind, why are they being so defensive about the cause of it? Is it just to exculpate themselves from any responsibility?
Well, that's a good question, because the medical institution is quite a phenomenon. If we look at the history of it, I see an incredible parallel to the case of Dr. Oliver Wendell Holmes back in the early 1800s. He figured out about washing hands, and the medical institution were the ones that argued against him for 70 years. These guys are a very stubborn lot, and they really stick to protocol, standard procedure, etc., so that they will not get sued, nor will their alma mater get sued. And, you know, that's all they worry about is the bottom line is about money and who might get sued. Because, you know, once they open up the Pandora's box that, hey, they might be liable for all the neurological damage that they've been giving to these children for the past half century, they just don't want to open that door. But then meanwhile, nobody has a clue as to what's causing autism. And SIDS is still called mysterious. And for someone like me who's been researching exactly how vaccines are made, exactly how they work, that's all it takes to understand how these things can be incredibly dangerous and destroying the budding brain cells of our babies, which are born too soon. We don't take into account the physiology of these babies that are born gestationally premature, I call it, because they're born without any insulation on their nerves or brain cells for 2 years. And they don't run and achieve full electrical power in their neurological system and their nervous system until 2 years. So 2 years is really the golden age, which a child is protected just enough where they could then be injected with aluminum, mercury, toxins, missing antitoxin, and, you know, these super strains of living viruses. There's a lot to touch on. You know, they even have super strains of viruses that they've been breeding in the laboratories for years. People only have to look up words like TCID and PFU, and that's like tissue culture infectious dose and plaque forming units, and it opens up a whole world of these super strains that they're using now.
Somehow, the pretext for getting vaccinations, when I think of the military, for instance, and let's say it's the Navy, and they're going to a certain part of the world where, quote, unquote, there's danger lurking in the jungle or in the harbors. And I'm not saying that that's not the case, but there are millions or even billions of people living in that area who aren't getting vaccinated for anything, and they're doing quite fine. Yet they have to, obviously there's someone who's lobbied for those vaccines to be administered to the military. So they're all getting their vaccinations and then they're getting sick. And of course we don't hear about that. Now we are hearing about those things, especially since this bird flu and swine flu pandemic became a topic of the news. Created in a lab, unleashed in Mexico, shortly before or concurrent with Obama's visit. And then he comes back, and the guy that actually was handling the samples from Fort Detrick came down with the swine flu, and so did his family. And they were deathly ill. Now, the mind games that they're playing on everybody, you know, you're going here to this part of the world, therefore you have to be vaccinated. My mind cannot grasp the creation, cannot grasp the fact that if God screwed up that badly, he forgot to put a syringe in our rear end so we could just be getting vaccinations our whole life.
Yeah, unfortunately it's gotten all askewed. I mean, what potentially could be a very great thing. And mind you, the successful immunizations for smallpox and polio, which are real big success campaigns, those are for the living viral ones. And measles is one where genes are altered over time, which is why the Europeans and the Indians had a different experience. But what you touched on too about the soldiers going over, I do remember that the Gulf War, they gave them a lot of vaccines for these brand new, again, biological warfare. So they gave them some very deadly and toxic things that had never really been experimented on humans before. Because you got to realize these are tested on rats in labs, and the brains of rats are, you know, not quite on par with ours. So you can't really judge what's going to happen to a human being when they're giving these things.
Mm-hmm. I'm making a very general statement, but I look at how we're created. First of all, we weren't created to have all these things injected into our system. It's it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're going to argue that this is solid science and it's foundational and based in a reality, in a medical reality, rather than a financial reality, then show us how. And they don't seem to be willing to do that.
Oh no, and they don't bother to really, I mean, every single parent who has to bring their child in for a vaccine is completely in the dark as to why this stuff is even needed. I mean, when you and I were kids, there were maybe 3 shots. They were just, you know, and we were from a generation, everybody was healthy and neurologically sound. You know, their immune systems were strong. Now, they give them for things like Hib. Hib, Haemophilus influenza B. It's a strange name, but it's a bacteria that lives in our throat. And they give this shot, oh, as many times as they give the whooping cough to the kids. And it gets chock full of diphtheria. It's very toxic, and it's definitely one of the causes of autism. And there's no reason to take this. Hib is a bacteria that helps our immune system. It lives in our throat, which is where our strongest immune system is. Actually, by injecting, that's why the oral polio was so successful, because it was a drink that addressed the immune system that's in our throat, which is where germs naturally enter in. It's through our mouth and our nose. I mean, the reason for skin is to keep germs from entering in our skin. So by breaking the skin and injecting with a needle, you have to have a real good reason to do that. That should not be done willy-nilly and randomly, and kids should not be stuck 36 times or whatever the number is by the time they're 18 months old. It's a huge and ever-growing number. And it's overkill. They're doing way too much, and they're giving them for things that are actually weakening their immune system, such as the Hib one. Hepatitis B is another example. They give that the minute they're born. And you have to be careful and ask for them not to give it, because they'll just stick them anyways. And hepatitis B spreads like AIDS. Kids won't get it unless they're having sex and sharing needles. So there's obviously no reason to give this to babies the minute they're born. It makes no sense. I mean, it's mind-blowing when you really go through the schedule and you pick apart each vaccine. There's very few that they really need.
Yeah. Now, what comes to mind, too, are the frequent, and you don't hear about this much today. Certainly, when we were kids, we heard about this all the time. Tonsillitis, a child getting a tonsillectomy and or having both the tonsils and the adenoids removed.
Yeah, they got to pay off their medical school bills, you know. And then the mercury in the teeth, that's a great one too. Yeah, it you know, the medical institution, you have to be very careful with them. They were just announcing today on the news how 50,000 people die from secondary infection in hospitals. You know, the total number is 100,000 because they killed another 50,000 accidentally. And you know, they're you know, it's kind of like a fast food restaurant. They kind of shuffle you in the emergency door and out, hopefully not out the wrong door, out the back. You know.
And there's a lot of ways that they can deliver that. I suspect that the food, that if you want to call it that, I certainly couldn't call it food. What they give you for nourishment while you're in the hospital, and the method through which they deliver it to you, just stacking everything on a cart and wheeling it down the hallways in and out of rooms where people are sick. People are going to be exposed to a mixture of disease, and if it is coming through the food, then we know that the food preparation is severely lacking in cleanliness.
Well, it's more so that it's a repository for diseases to grow in the corners of the rooms. Basically, the bacteria is phenomenal, because it can learn to flush out anything you give it, which is why we've moved through 7 levels of antibiotics, and we now have MRSA, which is a common bacteria that's just been exposed to every level we've got, and we don't have any more. So that's why we're now in trouble with that. But yeah, they'll learn to live on bleach, some of them, and so they get some pretty nasty strains in them. But so that is part of the picture, is parents must study the diseases to know which is really a priority or not. Now, in the old days, the only really scary disease we've ever really had is polio. And that's because there was no solution for once you got it. But now, you know, the oral polio was a very successful campaign. And the only mistake they made was giving it to anybody under the age of 2 and thinking it was going to vaccinate them for life. And it won't. So, but other than that, the other diseases like measles and whooping cough, there's antibody shots for those diseases, just like they have for tetanus, and they work very well. But they don't tell you this. They make you think that vaccine is the only alternative, and it's really not, especially in this day and age where we live with a lot of, you know, we have incredible sanitation nowadays. Germs do not spread like they did in the old days, and we live in a whole other world now where we, you know, the main things we need, you know, to worry about, AIDS and you know, other things around the world are not even what they're addressing now. They're giving vaccines for things that they really don't need. Tetanus is silly.
Yeah.
You don't need tetanus. Baby's not going to crawl onto anything in a building. Tetanus lives in farmlands under the ground. And yeah, people don't think about this. They've just been made by the doctors to be afraid of every single disease and make them feel criminal if they don't stick their kid with the shot.
You know, it raises the question then, and I suppose we could do a whole series of shows on this. my mind is going 1,000 miles an hour here, just trying to grasp, okay, what are the diseases that we could say were not man-made?
If you get my meaning. Oh, were not man-made?
Yeah, the ones that
were not. Oh, you mean like Lyme disease? Lyme's disease is a good example. My brother, who was a PhD in toxicology, used to work in some of the labs in Connecticut there. So I'm very familiar with the fact that, you know, mice and rats can escape from the laboratories there. And apparently that's what happened, and that's why they call it Lyme's. It came from Lyme, Connecticut, where they have a lot of these pharmaceutical labs.
Okay, now today with the chemtrail spraying, when the earlier cases of Morgellons were coming out, and there's a lot of information on this disease now that wasn't available a few years ago, and you have these fibrous growths growing out of lesions all over the body, and there are so many foreign substances within the chemtrails that are appearing in the bloodstreams of the people that come down with this. This is a man-made disease. This is warfare.
Yes, I don't know a whole lot about the chemtrails, but it does appear, if these experts are, you know, correct in what they're saying, that it's desiccated blood with viruses in it, which would make sense, because what the medium you use to grow the diseases on is an important part of the procedure. And if they're growing it on human blood cells, well, then it would have an affinity for humans. Which makes me think of when we were talking about the batches before, what they're doing is they're growing, in each vat, they grow as big a colonies as they can of each disease for the vaccines. I mean, people must realize the vaccines literally are made up of the bodies of the diseases. And then they throw in aluminum, usually for suspension material and all kinds of other garbage. But I was going to say that these diseases are grown on mediums. In the old days, they were always animal proteins, such as measles was grown on monkey kidney. I mean, I'm sorry, on chicken eggs, and polio was grown on monkey kidneys. And nowadays, which is how we got the AIDS epidemic, which is another story. But nowadays, they're using actually cancer cells to grow these batches of viruses and bacteria, because the cancer cells live perpetually. They don't have a limited life cycle like normal cells do. And that's really scary. And you can read this in any nurse's textbook, you know, and they're just reading along about how vaccines are made slightly and saying, oh, yes, and nowadays we just use batches of cancer cells that never die. Like some sourdough culture that just never ends. But the cancer cells, this can't be good at all.
Yeah, what are they using as the source of the cancer cell?
Oh, no, these are human cancer cells. I mean, I had noticed that they had graduated, you know, the chickenpox vaccine is fairly new. And then reading that recipe and how they made it, I noticed that they were using human embryonic lung cells. And I thought, gee, that's odd. Usually they attenuate it. They grow it on an animal species different than human. Why would they use human embryonic cells? And that must have been a precursor to them using cancer cells, because embryonic cells would reproduce very well also. So now they are literally using cancer cells from what I understand, virtually all the batches of vaccines. Now, this is even new information to me because this is they're always upgrading what they're doing and changing, and this is the newest thing they're doing now. And it's obviously not a good thing. I mean, alarms go off immediately. I would be surprised if growing these things on cancer cells would be safe. but the point is nobody's looking at it. Nobody's considering any of the ingredients, any of the production, you know, the different means in which they use to produce this stuff. Nobody is looking at the consequences of any of these things. I mean, some people are. You can look at the University of Calgary and see the mercury destroying the budding brain cells. They've got some great footage of that. Canada's ahead of the curve. And they've even contacted me. They've gotten, you know, imaging they can do and watch the brain cells being dying in the limbic system after some injections. I mean, there's three kinds of vaccines, and they can all kill brain cells in three different ways, and through toxins, heavy metals, or super strains.
Well, there's no doubt that that's going on, I can tell you.
Yeah,
just watching average individual.
It is, and it's astounding what they can get away with and what they can do. And when you were talking also about like the releasing of the swine flu, well, actually they're always growing swine flu in the labs. I mean, that's how they make it's been in vaccines for years. And to make it for the vaccine, you actually have to grow it. So it'd be very easy at any point in time for somebody to just grab a batch of it and go and toss it out, you know, into a crowd or whatever. You know, it'd be very simple to release it because they don't need to make a new batch. It's always there anyways. It always has been there.
you've been putting this information out for some time. Have you encountered anyone trying to debunk or discredit what you're saying? Because this all makes perfect sense. I can imagine working...
Well,
in one of these labs where my job is to increase the yield of these cultures and being dressed like I'm about to land on Mars or something, you know, in a spacesuit.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's definitely the way it is. And unfortunately, they're a little lazy in the production and they're taking a lot of risk. And, you know, the point is to make the vaccine work. It doesn't matter if there's, you know, some loss, if there's some sacrifice. Matter of fact, back in the old days, they used to send the kids home from school with stickers saying, I'm a good soldier, I've been vaccinated. Because they see it, you're sacrificing yourself for the better good of the whole population by theory. And that's why there's acceptable consequences. And if, you know, they've had to give up their life for that sacrifice, then that's what a good soldier does. So luckily they kind of dropped that campaign after a while, especially when the 90s hit and kids were really dropping like flies. You know, SIDS was increasing and, you know, autism's increasing. And, you know, I came from a day, my first child was born in 1978, and my mother taught me to put them to sleep on their stomach so they wouldn't choke on their spit up. And that's the way it had been done since time immemorial. Mothers always put their babies to sleep on their stomach. And now, all of a sudden, you're supposed to put your baby to sleep on its back for the first time in, you know, 100,000 years because they're going to stop breathing? What baby stops breathing while they're sleeping? I mean, we've got this, like, epidemic of babies stopping breathing. And parents are scratching their heads. And if they actually just look at the recipes of how they're made and they wonder what the diphtheria and tetanus toxin part means, then they'll realize their kids are being poisoned and they're just waiting for the poison to wear off. So parents have to be their own doctors, in a sense, for their kids. They have to do investigation. They have to study not people's opinions, but the actual science behind it. And that's where I'm different. I have my opinions about it, but everything I'm saying, my opinions all come from solid fact. And, you know, the words I mentioned, Ehrlich's phenomenon or plaque-forming units, if people look up those words, they'll see what I'm talking about, and they'll start scratching their heads, too, and going, well, maybe this is not a good idea to give up babies.
There's sort of a pun in the name Ehrlich. Ehrlich in German means really.
Really? Yeah, it's spelled E-H-R-L-I-C-H, Ehrlich.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
In German, Ehrlich means really.
Well, it really is a phenomenon that they're trying to do this to people, for sure.
Wow, there are just so many thoughts going through my mind right now. It seems that recently And I say maybe within the past 10 years or so, I'm not exactly sure about the time, but I would guess in the last 10 years, there has been this rash of diagnoses where a child probably got a vaccination somewhere prior to this happening, and one or both of the parents are arrested for child abuse, and they've come up with this diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome. Now, you could only determine that the child suffered brain damage by doing a CAT scan or an MRI or something along those lines. Is that just scapegoat definition of the damage that's been caused by the vaccination? Do you suspect that at all?
Well, I haven't quite heard about the shaken baby syndrome as their excuse, but I did get a lot of phone calls when Jenny McCarthy first came out, with parents very much relieved that it wasn't their fault, because that is what the doctors tell them. They do tell them it's their genes and all that kind of stuff, but basically it has very little to do with genes, and all of this has to do with what we're doing to them.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the damage that's done, there's three main parts to the brain, and people don't really realize that, I guess, evolution is within our brain. We have the reptilian part, which is the brainstem, and the cerebellum, which handles physical motion. Then on top of that sits the limbic system. And that's the monkey part, the mammal part of our brain. I shouldn't say monkey, but it's the, because it's the mammal. All mammals have it. Dogs, cats, you name it, they all have it.
Well, and it could be a whale, too, then. Right?
Yeah, and then the big part of our brain, which takes up 80% of our brain, is called the neocortex on top. That's actually the human part of the brain, and it's just for basically storing information. So the part of the brain that is damaged in autistics is the limbic system. It's the mammal part of the brain. It's the part of the brain where we have millions of years of genetic wiring of our instincts, and you can see, such as the instincts are missing in the autistic kids, which is why they don't know that they're supposed to imitate other humans to learn how to behave socially and how to survive. And that's why they initially, you know, called it something that, you know, autism speaks of them being kind of in their own little world, because they don't know that there is even a reason to look at another human being and talking to them and relate. And, you know, they're missing the passion for life. They're missing empathy. They're missing, you know, being able to be poetic. And I'm talking about the classic autistics. I'm not talking the ones that are higher up on the spectrum that are more towards Asperger's. I'm talking like the classic autistic kids that won't look you in the eye and have nothing to say and aren't trying to say anything, and this is damage to the limbic system, which the Canadians could tell were happening too, and it's evident. And that's also, for instance, where the pineal gland is, which produces the melatonin to help one sleep at night. And part of the autistic child, I say it like that because they always called it autistic child because there were no adults originally when it happened, and the name is kind of stuck. But they don't sleep at night because the melatonin isn't being produced to put their brain down. And if they don't sleep at night, you can't store the information you gather during the day. It's really quite fascinating. We have a daily brain inside the limbic system that gathers information every day. And at night, when our brain has shut down, our mind spends time sorting through all the information we've gathered and actually stores it. It chooses what to store. And part of the reason we forget things the next day is because our mind has not chosen to store that particular information. And the daily brain is like an answering machine, in the sense that the next day, whatever information you gathered the day before, it will get covered over. It will be replaced by the new information. So you actually lose your information every day. And you
or isn't it possible that it becomes disconnected from the circuit and finds a place to reside?
Actually what's happening is they're literally missing the brain cells. And you can see, I have an image in my booklet, you can see where there's a gap of air where the top of the brain has dropped down from the skull.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the limbic system's collapsed. They can see hyperperfusion. There's not enough blood going into that area, and it's literally because the brain cells have died. I mean, they don't have enough.
Yes.
For enough activity. That's literally what's happening. Once these brain cells, when they go, they don't get replaced in the limbic system, at least not readily. I mean, I suppose I could never say never, but they don't. In the higher brain, they do. We can always create new memories. But, you know, they deal with a lot of seizures, and the boys deal with a lot of seizures because they have so much the electrical current going up their spine doesn't change. They still have an incredible flush of energy, especially the boys do, which is tied into their testosterone. And testosterone kicks in while they're still in the womb. It kicks in 6 days after birth, 15 days after birth. And these kids, if they've gotten brain cells destroyed in the limbic system or any part of their brain during that period of time, then that energy will just spill over and just blow out brain cells like Christmas tree lights, you know? They get overamped. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not enough receptors for all that energy. And boys do have more energy than girls. And, yeah, it's a mess. We're creating a precedent for a mess. And until we start looking at what we're putting in these kids, and they're not going to begin to figure out how to stop it from happening, much less figure out what to do about it. You know, the kids that are able to repair themselves, a lot of them are the older kids. It depends on how deeply they were damaged and at what age. And the older they are, the easier it is for them to repair themselves, unless it's really been a terrible onslaught, which can happen. But generally, that's why a lot of the kids, they look like they were born that way, because, you know, they give them their first shot the minute they're born, and then it's 6 weeks, every 2 months. You know, by the time they're 6 months old, they've been shot up a dozen times already, you know, and it's overkill. And then Europe waits 6 months, Japan waits 2 years. Japan is voluntary over there. You know, we act like, oh, you have to stick them as much as you can, as quick as you can. I mean, there's no reason to be in that big of a hurry. You know, we're able to protect our kids from a lot of germs. And
well, they want the money now. They don't want to wait, you know.
They sure do. They're a little too gung-ho. Yeah, it's become really big business.
Now,
really
I found it interesting
business.
That you mentioned the pineal gland and in relationship to melatonin production. It's also where our intuition resides. In fact, having the pineal gland be open and receptive is how we reach our higher powers, how we manifest our higher powers. Mm-hmm. And there's a connection to the heart center in that. And if in any way, and you mentioned the throat, which is exactly the chakra in between the heart and the pineal gland. If you attack the immune system, it's as though In order to dumb down, and this is what I see, if I look at the bigger picture, it's to dumb down the populace, it's to dumb down the individual, and cut that individual off from the higher powers that we have. This is why you don't see so many people exhibiting their higher powers, because their pineal gland is either dormant or totally disconnected from the rest of the system.
Yeah, with people with autistic kids know quite well that they have trouble sleeping at night, and that's why. It's the melatonin. And without that, they will forget the next, that's why they have to repeat everything. Day after day, they have to repeat the same things. And then slowly but surely through osmosis, they'll learn something. But it's always along the lines of the same thing, like in the computer. The more familiar they become, the more they can slowly and surely learn. But it takes them a long time, and it's merely because they can't sleep at night to store their memories. And it's quite fascinating. It becomes quite simple. What seems very complex, the more one looks at it, suddenly, as we learn the basic functions of everything, it becomes much more simplified. And then suddenly we're not as afraid of these diseases, and we're not as afraid of the human being not being able to defend themselves. And we must remember that when we get a natural cold, naturally we're doing our own self-immunization, and we will never get that cold germ again. And that's really the best way to go about it, is for our bodies to get some help with the antibody shots if we need it, but basically just deal with the diseases so then we will not get them again, and also we pass those genes on to our kids. And that's what mothers are doing while they're nursing. They're passing their genes on to their kids while they're nursing, the antibodies and everything. And the kids are already protected for those first 2 years. They really don't need, and the protection lasts for a long time, months. after they stop nursing. They really don't need to, you know, if the mothers just play it right, they'll have strong, healthy kids with strong immune systems, and their brains will be intact, and they'll be full of empathy, and it'll be a wonderful experience as opposed to following traditional medicine and getting bogged down with these huge bills and having to stand over your kid to keep them breathing for months on end, and it's a nightmare.
Yeah, I can imagine it's traumatic to have to deal with that 24/7. And, you know, we deal, those of us that aren't experiencing that in our lives really don't understand what a parent goes through or what the child goes through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in cases of, we have now various illnesses, if you want to call them that, maladies that are attributed to brain function, ADD, ADHD, and in adults where they're diagnosed as being bipolar. I know that I know a few people who are bipolar, and if they get out of balance between their sleep and their eating habits and just general tranquility throughout the day, they can go into a psychotic episode where they're oblivious to everything that's going on. They're talking. They can go into convulsions, fits, temper tantrums, or psychotic episodes. I mean, I've seen the whole spectrum. And I would attribute that to probably some brain damage that's occurred through the vaccination process. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it could be any number of things, but you know, you mentioned that ADHD and the ADD. I have a problem with that because boys, for instance, are genetically wired to be running all day. I mean, if you think about it, for a million years, the boys that could run the longest and the hardest and go hunting for their family could support them, and they were the genes that lived on. The ones that were not as active were not as likely to survive. And now we want to suddenly reverse millions of years of genetic wiring and make boys sit all day at school? It's completely criminal. Boys are not designed to sit. And we're forcing those kids that are perfectly normal, energetic boys to take drugs to sit all day. And if that wouldn't make somebody crazy after being raised like that, spending their childhood and all this medication and drugs that they give them, it's no wonder, you know, America's falling to, what, 25th in the world, educationally speaking. I mean, even Russia produces kids better off than we do, you know, as far as the education system goes. I mean, not that we don't have some great schools here, but they're loaded with kids from around the world, more than American kids, because we're messing with our kids. We're not giving them enough recess. We're saying that they have to sit all day and learn all this stuff. And we're dumbing down the classes to make them able to learn it, and the boys are just crawling the walls. And the ones that can sit, you know, then, yeah, oh, they're going to be raised to just sit at a desk all day. I really think we should adopt what they do in Europe, where in junior high they can go into vocational schools and whatnot. If we would just leave them alone for the first couple of years of their life and let their brains settle in and their neurons make all their connections, and, you know, we'd have a whole new generation of kids.
Yeah, the benchmark for an education in this country is basically what you can memorize. Being able to show that you can memorize formulas or memorize places and things. I'm not saying that there's no value in that, but there's no practical use for the information that we're given. We're asked to be computers, hard drives, basically. Storing information, storing the program, but the program is not to be run by the operator.
Right. A lot of boys learn better standing up, and I know some schools have started a thing where they're bringing in bouncing balls for them to bounce. But unfortunately, you know, a lot of kids don't even make it that far, and you can see looking at them, they kind of have a dark, sunken look to their eyes, and that's because, you know, their neocortex is dropping down. You know, if you go to my website, you can see these images. I've put together some great MRI images and other ones that are showing, you know, the decrease in electrical activity in their brains and the obvious proof that there's brain cells missing, and it's obvious why. they would be missing.
Let me ask you an off-the-wall question, and I'm sure any listeners out there that are really paying attention to what we're talking about are going to get a kick out of this. I'm visualizing 9/11 in the classroom in the Florida elementary school. It was a third grade classroom. They're reading My Pet Goat, and the President of the United States is holding the book upside down. Tell me, vaccine or education? What was the cause behind that?
Oh, it could be so many things. And he could have toxoplasmosis in his brain, too. You know, that parasite that comes from, you know, feces and stuff. I was oh, boy. There's all kinds of things that, yeah, they force little cysts in the brain, you know, start controlling you. Yeah, we really have to watch out the microscopic world. It's quite a scary world we live in. Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't know if he's human. He could be a robot inside.
I was standing out there in the hallway, and the TV set was out there, and it was on, and I saw that plane crash into the building, and I thought, wow, that's one bad pilot. That was his comment later on, okay? I never got over the fact that he was holding that book, My Pet Goat, upside down.
No, yeah, he's a complete disaster.
Even the choice of the book is, we could do a whole show on that, but.
Well, yeah, no, well, I'm not very happy about any of this that's going on with the vaccine debacle, though, giving all these kids so many vaccines and then not listening to the parents, not paying any attention to, oh, my kid had seizures. You know, luckily a lot of parents stop and they don't bring them back in after they see the seizures and the problems that their kids have following some of these vaccines. But we're all guinea pigs, our whole population. They're experimenting with us and then they're not looking at the results. They're not, you know, I mean, it's one thing to experiment on the human progeny of men, and another thing, not to even pay attention to the results then, if you're going to do that.
Now, the last time you were on the show, I mentioned briefly that I had Dr. Rashid A. Buttar from Hendersonville, North Carolina, on the show, and he had described some great success that he's had reversing autism in a very holistic discipline, we'll say, where he's combining a number of different methods together, and he's having great success. Of course, he was praised for his work, 36 straight hours of emergency treatment on Desiree Jennings, the Washington Redskins cheerleader that had an adverse reaction to a flu shot. And I'm wondering if sometime down the road I can't put you in touch with him and him in touch with you, that you can discuss your research, because I see a lot of parallels and a lot of places where your research dovetails in with his methods.
Yeah, I'm very good.
I see, you know, those that are out there doing some good working together, or, you know, supporting each other's cause, because this is about getting the message to millions and millions of people, even billions of people. It's just the truth. It's obvious the powers that be don't intend to share the truth with us, the actual facts. And you've demonstrated to me that you have a lot of information that is grounded in truth, very factual stuff.
Yes, and parents themselves can go and look at the manufacturer's notes on how these vaccines are made, and they can see that the side effects are neurological disorders, they are seizures, and that they are banned over the age of 6, many of them, you know, not to be given to adults. They're just for the kids, and there's, you know, red flags pop up right and left when you start diving into it. It never ceases to shock me. I've been studying this 25 years, and I still always learn something new that just blows me out of the water, that they would dare to do such things. You know, we're going to look back in the future at this time and just be shaking our heads that we did it. Just like when we look back in the 1800s and think, oh, my God, doctors didn't wash their hands in the 1800s. They went from corpses to delivering babies, and then the mothers would die, and they'd think, gee, I keep killing every patient I touch with my filthy hands. I can't figure this out. And then they stubbornly did this for 70 years, even though this doctor was running around, Dr. Oliver Wendell Holmes, saying, wash your hands, wash your hands. And that was the washing hands movement. Now we're dealing with the please look at the vaccine ingredients before you stick them in my baby, you know.
Yes.
You were trying to beg for a little insight, a little light on this subject.
Well, when I look at the fact that, you know, in essence, when they threaten the parents, let's say to say something along the lines of, you know, your child doesn't get this vaccination, you will not be in school, or we'll put you in jail, or you'll be fined. They're blaming the child for something that hasn't occurred, aren't they? They're implying that the child will then give the disease to everyone else in the school.
Ooh,
well,
yeah.
If the kids in the school are getting the vaccines, they should be immune from it, shouldn't they?
Well, also they know, I mean, even when they are giving 100% of the children vaccines, only every other vaccine will stick in the children. It doesn't work in everybody anyway. So not the entire population is vaccinated anyways. You only need about 50% vaccinated to keep a disease from spreading through. But we don't have diseases like that anymore. Where's the vaccine for cholera? Cholera is the reason we went out west. They kept saying, oh, it's manifest destiny. It wasn't manifest destiny. They had cholera chasing them. And the only reason it stopped is it couldn't go any higher once they hit the mountains, the Rocky Mountains. Once they started climbing over those, the bacteria died up in the mountains. But they don't vaccinate us for cholera. I mean, they're very specific on what they want to vaccinate us with. I mean, we don't get diphtheria anymore. How come the kids get 20 injections of diphtheria by the time they're a few years old? Being that it's in every single bacterial vaccine, they're getting an awful lot of it. Same
yeah.
thing with the tetanus toxoid. You get one injection of that, it lasts 10 years. But by the time a kid is 18 months old, he's had 5 shots of it. I mean, it's just all overkill. We just get a big piece of paper and start writing down all these words. Okay, to use mercury to count the germ particles of the virus shells, that can't be good. And they add aluminum, that creates synergistic toxicity. And then, you know, with the living viruses that they're breeding in the labs, they judge them by putting them in these little petri dishes. And they can actually see where the virus has snuck inside the cell. And the cell doesn't know it's got a virus inside, and it immediately plugs up the hole with a plaque plug. And that's the plaque-forming units of the chickenpox virus. And so they've got chickenpox viruses that can infect over 50% of the cells in their petri dishes, which is quite a bit higher than the natural-forming chickenpox. See, they've created breeds that invade cells, many more cells than the natural ones even. And this is pretty scary stuff. And especially with the living viruses I'm talking about now, when they inject them into the body and break the skin, I'm going to guess 10%, but there is a definite percentage of those living viruses that will make it into the central nervous system and into the brain, which is why a lot of multiple sclerosis patients have measles in their spines. You'll also find herpes in the spines of multiple sclerosis, but basically it's any virus that gets into the spine will destroy the insulation around the nerves. And that's what it does in the brain. And basically, the living viruses are causing autism in the brains of these kids by causing multiple sclerosis on their brains. It's really the same thing. It's just
my understanding of many of these viruses, Allison, is that they emit a protein which acts as a, you know, it can even crystallize. It acts as a protective membrane.
Well, the viruses are very simple. They're really strange kind of I call them the little alien robots, really. Because whereas you have a bacteria is closer to what we are. It has a mouth, a stomach, has an anus, you know. I mean, they move around, legs. But the viruses, all they are is DNA with a shell around it and a proboscis to inject it into something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the immune system is terrified of this stuff. So all they do for the dead viruses, they just take, they throw away the DNA, and they take the shell, and that pieces of that shell is enough for an immune system to kind of freak out. And they, that's why they don't have to add the poison to the dead viruses, only to the dead bacteria. The reason they mess up the dead viral vaccines would be the safer of the three if they didn't put mercury in it. But they put mercury in it to count the germ particles. And I'm not talking about thimerosal. That's something separate. They actually, in the processing, use mercury, and they won't know how many viral particles they have if they don't.
Oh, but they don't take the mercury out when they get
in. Some of them do, actually. They try to take some of it out, but you can never take it all out, and the percentage they take out is very small because the mercury has, the word is adsorbed, A-D-S-O-R-B. It's adsorbed. It's become part of the viral shell.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't really separate that much of it.
That is then the definition of a ligand, isn't it? In other words, it's a delivery medium.
No, the delivery medium is the aluminum.
Oh, that would be the aluminum then.
Okay. Or salt. Sometimes they use salt, but usually it's aluminum. At least like in the Hep B, it's definitely aluminum.
Yeah, step right up, folks. Get your aluminum shots.
Yeah, aluminum. See, aluminum targets the liver, and the mercury goes to the brain. And the liver is what cleans the toxins out of the body. So if it's all clogged up with aluminum, it can't do anything. And then the brain has a field day. And that's why it goes, the kill rate goes from 1% to 100%. I kid you not. That's what synergistic toxicity is. It's 100% mm-hmm. kill rate. It's absolutely astounding.
Yes, a friend of mine had his grandson. Well, he didn't have let's say his grandson was about to enter football in middle school, 12 years old. And in order to play football, he had to get a series of shots.
For what?
And he got the Hep B, the DPT, all the shots you're describing,
mm-hmm.
and possibly a swine flu shot. It wasn't admitted, but when the parents finally raised,
if you got a flu shot, it would have had swine flu in it.
With them, yeah, it had swine flu in it. It's what we think.
They do. I mean, you can look it up.
He developed a temperature above 104 degrees within a matter of hours. And
oh, I'm sure. His immune system's fighting several diseases at once. I mean, what are they thinking? In the old days, they never even combined all these things at once. They let the body fight one at a time. Now they have so many, they end up combining them all. And, God, creating all these problems.
Now, of course, he had to have the shot to play football. Now he's not allowed to play football, because he got the shot and had a very adverse reaction.
Oh, is he?
Imagine that. So,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, right. Well, he's lucky that he was the age he was at, that he was 12 and not, 12 months.
Well, he's lucky he's alive.
Yeah,
really.
And that's why we lose so many of these children.
Yes.
Under 6 months and under a year, these kids. It's amazing they recover as well as they do.
Yeah.
But, no, their hearts are stopping from the poison, and the viruses are having a field day if they give that too soon. And then the mercury is a nightmare. I mean, it's endless. But it's very good that we have this audience here listening. They're going to look up words like synergistic toxicity, Ehrlich's phenomenon, and,
Of course, or they can read tracking vaccinations, and I'd like you to give out some information so that they can order that from you. I will post it on my site. We're almost out of time here, so we've got to wrap up. But that would be a good segue for you to give out the information.
Okay. Yes. If they go to tracking vaccinations, they'll see that I have a booklet that's 44 pages with lots of images and diagrams and. It's an introduction. It's kind of broken down and simplified, and people can, reference back and forth and learn all kinds of fascinating things about, how the living viruses are frozen in suspended animation and how they thaw out once they get injected in the body, and then they come back alive and start swimming around. People can then visualize. My goal is for people to be able to visualize on a microscopic level what's happening when an injection is, when their child is injected with some of this stuff. so they can really see what's going on.
Yes, you know. and you, I have to say, for the amount of information that's in there, this is worth, when you consider the implications of vaccinating your child or your children or yourself for that matter, $4.95 for a single copy is a very reasonable price, and you have specials on quantity orders as well. So.
Yes, that helps me pay for the shipping at $4.95. But if people buy two, they're only $3.95 or $4 each. And if somebody buys 10, then they're $2.95 each. That's only, so you can buy 10 for $30.
Yeah, still well under the price of a visit.
So. Oh yes, yes. And I make myself accessible for people to call up and ask me specific questions about a specific vaccine, perhaps hopefully before they give it to their child and not afterwards. But I am here to help people. They can email me. They can be in touch. I would love it if they bought the book. I have bumper stickers. And I like the books particularly too because, you know, they can pass them out to their friends at the playground and, you know, get them going around and, they're the beginning. I mean, you can hold it in your hand. You can see the images. You can see the drawings. I talk about the infant physiology, and have images of the viruses and the bacterias and the myelin growing on the nerves. They can get an idea about what I'm talking about when I talk about the insulation. There's so many important aspects to this subject that need to be taken into consideration.
Yes, and it'll fit inside a shirt pocket with no problem. Mm-hmm. So it's not a huge body of work, but it's information packed. And I notice this is your 10th edition that I got.
Mm-hmm.
You published this one in September of 2009. So it appears you've been keeping up with the emerging diseases at the same time.
Yes, I keep updating it. And it unfortunately is not published now because it's only a booklet. And I'm kind of trying to build up my business. I have Neoteric Publications and I sell Best Exotic Baby Names. Because this is such a niche thing, I don't really ask money for all my research. I just give it out to people. I just want to spread the truth and the information. So I do this because I'm dedicated to it. Have not been able to put this particular book in print form yet. But when I do, I'll be able to go on Oprah, which is what I hope I can do someday.
teach her a thing or two.
Yeah, she'll listen. She's open-minded.
Well, I'm getting hit with a bunch of chat messages and questions and emails and that, but we're out of time.
Okay.
I will, on a future show, address the issue of the pineal gland. I can say that these vaccinations tend to block the flow of information, which is light, and light is a way of reconnecting the pineal gland with the rest of the organism.
The pineal gland's in that it's in that part of the brain that's the foundation of us. Everything that makes us human is the mammal part of our brain, that limbic system, which is where the pineal gland is. Yeah. Very important area.
Okay. Well, Allison, again, it's been very informative, and you've been a great sport tolerating my jokes.
Oh, I love them. It's great. A little comic relief. We need it.
So I look forward to having you on the show again this coming month. If you will accept an invitation, we'll work that out in our schedule.
Excellent. Sounds wonderful.
Okay.
Sounds
Thank
great.
You very much.
Thank you.
Well, that about wraps it up, folks. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's special guest, Allison Jones. You can visit her website at www.trackingvaccinations.com. And I encourage you to get your hands on at least one copy, if not more, of Tracking Vaccinations, The Autism Trail. Excellent booklet. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for carrying Evident Footprints. Also, like to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest and your special guest will be none other than publisher, editor of the Idaho Observer, Ingrid Castle. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.